Welcome to Email After Hours by Senderscore, powered by Validity.
We're your hosts. My name is Guy Hansen.
And I'm Danielle Gallant, and this is Email After Hours.
Which brands are you most loyal to? Some consumers are totally devoted to Dunkin' over Starbucks, Hulu over Netflix. Others simply choose whichever brand is most convenient in the moment. But wherever your customers fall on the spectrum, loyalty has to be earned, right? The relationship between a business and its customers has to be a give-and-take thing. It might seem simple. You provide a good, reliable service, and you retain your base. But our guest today, the CEO of The Loyalty Co., knows that brands can't afford to be complacent. Today, we're very lucky to be with Adam Perslow, who is going to give us a loyalty 101 lesson and, of course, talk to us about how he uses emails to that end. He's been in hospitality for more than 22 years, and while he worked in a number of operational roles in restaurants, Adam already had his eye on revolution and sought to find ways to nurture customer loyalty. He made a huge splash with his Club Individual app, 2 million members. For individual restaurants, now he's taken that expertise to the world with The Loyalty Co. and now to us and you, lucky listeners. Welcome to the show, Adam.
Thank you.
It's so cool to have you with us today. And we're going to have a great conversation about all things loyalty. But before we jump into that, we like to start out with a quick icebreaker, your starter for 10, if you will, for our English listeners. And let me put this to you. If you could look into one famous person's email inbox, who would it be and why?
I think it would have to be Elon Musk.
Have an inbox? Isn't it just Twitter all the way?
I think that's the question that I'm most interested in. I just think the emails that he will receive and the conversations he's part of will be absolutely incredible. So if I could have no holes barred access to anybody's inbox, I think it would have to be his, just for the fact that it will be risque. I'm sure it will be extremely interesting and probably quite dangerous, but that would be my answer.
It's a bunch of angry tweets.
Yeah. Twitter on email. Yeah.
And so for those who aren't familiar, tell us a little bit about The Loyalty Co. What's your mission?
Okay, so my mission when I created TLC a number of years ago now was to really drive engagement, was to offer, as Guy and yourself mentioned, my knowledge that I've built up from other businesses and other loyalty platforms and really offer that to other people. So loyalty is such a huge part of everyday life, certainly within the hospitality sector, which is all I've ever really known. So I've been around restaurants and hospitality for my whole life. I launched one of the very first hospitality loyalty apps many years ago now. And really, we have moved on. We've moved across different verticals. We've moved across different types of businesses. But ultimately, we've offered the ability to engage people, engage customers in what your brand is doing, and built out incredibly well in some cases, you know, the ability to do everything in an app. So book, engage with the brand, manage reservations, manage profiles, get notifications, be part of offers, see rewards. And that's really what TLC now does. We offer that to the world.
That's awesome. Now, loyalty is one of those things where you've got to go way beyond just talking the talk. You've absolutely got to walk the walk. You've got to drink your own Kool-Aid. So, Adam, what does loyalty mean to you? You know, what does a great loyalty experience look like? And have you got an example or two you can share with us?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've obviously been in the sector that I'm in, and with the background I've got, I've been around loyalty forever. And there are some great examples, and there are some examples of people that do it incredibly well. I know, Guy, you and I have spoken many times before, but my probably all-time favorite is the Hilton. My entry to the Hilton was on a status match. So I was an avid fan of a different loyalty scheme. And then they basically just said one day, we'll match your status and we'll give you the same value for 12 months. And that turned me to Hilton. They do it incredibly well. I'll always book using their app to get the points, double, triple points. The way that they engage with me, their email communications are incredible. You know, one of my all-time favorite emails that I receive is the annual Hilton email, which tells me how many cities I've visited, how many sites I've been to, how many points I've achieved, even down to what I've eaten. So a really good example of a one-to-one email in there. But I'd say they definitely do it incredibly well. Going back to hospitality, Club Individual was one of my favorites. Obviously, I was part of it. You know, a lot of the functionality in there was my idea. But essentially, they do it very well when with matching my data to reservations. So, for example, I want to go and book. I know in my profile that I like 2 sugars with my coffee. I know that I always like to eat sea bass and I like to sit on table 4. All of that information goes straight to the restaurant when I go, and it is actually matched, and the waiters in the site will sit me on the right table, will give me the right amount of sugars without having to ask. And that, I think, is really when loyalty comes into its own. And that's really when it becomes unrivaled.
I need to start being more specific with brands when I travel. I like this many sugars.
If you can get it right, it works.
You've mentioned a couple brands now, of course, that you think have excellent loyalty programs, but what really makes them tick? What are they doing that's different from other loyalty programs?
What really makes them tick is the fact that they don't try and change behavior. They complement existing behavior. So I know I want to go out for dinner. I just want a better experience. I know I'm going to go to a Hilton. I just want to be treated differently. So in the restaurant example, I like the fact that they know what I like. I not like the fact they know when my birthday is, that my daughter's called Margot. They know this information about me because they've built up this huge database of facts. And for them to then use it, it makes my experience better. So they're not trying to make me do anything different. They're not trying to push me into do something I don't want to do. They're just enhancing my experience. And I think that's when loyalty really works.
So obviously, you specialize in customer loyalty, but I think you've recognized and you've explained to our audience already, it goes way beyond just points and benefits and rewards. And I think we've heard words from you that illustrate ideas like a genuine sense of community and actual genuine care for customers. And has that been intentional as you've built out the loyalty co?
Definitely. I think I've learned from the past. I've tried many different things in the past, but the key really is just giving that extra bit of attention, that extra bit of care, that empathy to customers. And, you know, even more so now after COVID, one of our kind of biggest problems we had during COVID, I think I even did a webinar with you, Guy, but it was changing in direction because people weren't going out to eat. So how do you treat them differently based on this current situation? So let's just keep them informed. Let's keep them up to date on what's happening. Let's be positive and say, look, this is going to end at some point and we're going to be out of it. So you've really got to match with what's happening in the present world. At the moment, there's a cost of living crisis. You know, people aren't going out as much. So now, rather than offer a top-end bottle of champagne on offer or a lobster and a whatever it may be, let's try and see if we can react and give people the benefit of maybe a bit of discount, or we can give somebody something for free, or whether it's a promotion. There's plenty of ways of really engaging with your customers without trying to force them to do something. Give them a number of options, but react to what's happening in the current world, as we did with COVID, as we have done with the cost of living crisis. You know, people haven't got the same level of money to spend at the moment. So we've got to be mindful of that.
And I think that any facet of an email program relies on having good, accurate data, right, to function well. You've mentioned a couple data points already of your own that sort of allow these loyalty programs to speak to you and to be really effective. And we've also talked on the podcast about how there's kind of this line to walk between leveraging that zero-party data that subscribers are willingly providing and also not being like creepy and weird with it and being invasive. So how does TLC, the Loyalty Co. for everybody, help really use and leverage that data to personalize and stand out?
Look, we've all made horrible mistakes in the past with things that we've tried to do. I think generalizing pots of customer data is the way that we really try and work. So long gone are the days of trying to offer somebody a glass of champagne if they had one last time they came in. That's got everybody into trouble in the past and is now no good for anybody. But, you know, segment these customers into spend, into frequency, into the type of customer that they are. What we generally try to do is make sure that we don't send an email about a steak to a vegan. We don't necessarily ask the questions as to whether you eat meat or whether you don't, but we try and build up that picture based on comments, on customer notes, on visits, on previous spend history. And if we can do that, then we can be very clever around offering the right kind of messaging and the right kind of promotions to somebody. I've seen some horror stories that people have done in the past where, you know, it's like, would you like the lobster thermidor that you had 2 weeks ago when you came in, actually, that wasn't me, or I didn't know I was in there, or whatever it was, because it becomes so easy to get that information wrong. So by generalizing these pots, we find it really, really easy. And we find huge success in things, keeping it on email, but automation, so pre-visit, post-visit automations within hospitality are one area that we're having massive amounts of success with. So we don't necessarily know that they're going to order a specific item or that they've had that before. We just physically know that they're coming in. So can we nudge them to a specific item or a specific promotion just by letting them know that we know they're there, and if they need us, there's something for you? Good example, again, we've had a huge amount of success with pre-visit experiences. So one of the brands that we work with, we built a platform whereby you're visiting tomorrow. Everybody can amend and cancel their booking, but is it a birthday? Would you like a cake on the table? Would you like balloons? Would you like a special bunch of flowers? All of these things can be pre-ordered instantly, and the restaurant will make sure that the flowers are on the table or that the cake is ready. Just adds that extra experience. And again, you know, it might only be £5 or £10 for a box of chocolates, but the added value there is huge for the guest and also for the restaurant, because they're making extra revenue.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And Pizza Express used to do it well. Birthday came around, it was like, come on in and we'll give you a free bottle of Prosecco. And it's great. And then we spent a load of money on pizzas anyway. So they got it straight back.
Yeah, but,
you know, you've described some amazing ideas there. But even so, it still feels like it's becoming more and more difficult to hold on to customer loyalty. And I think you touched on the cost of living crisis a moment ago. Are there other factors which are making loyalty harder to generate and to maintain? And if there are, how should loyalty programs adapt in the face of these challenges?
I think the problem at the moment is generalization, because brands feel that they need to offer some level of loyalty. Brands will quite often give a discount. You mentioned Pizza Express. Pizza Express got to a stage at one point where nobody would go to Pizza Express unless there was a discount or unless there was something not. And I think we'll look at what people are doing in the marketplace. They'll look at what other businesses are doing in the marketplace and make assumptions. So unless you are extremely clear about the added value that your program brings, you become part of this generalization of loyalty. So is it points or is it something for free? Unless you explicitly tell people, unless you make it very, very clear within your program, then there's an assumption of what somebody's going to get. And they get very upset if that's not the case. You know, for example, myself, I think I've been around loyalty for that long. I won't go to a venue if I can't get points or if there's something that I can't do, whether it's American Express points or whether it's, you know, loyalty points. There's a lot of people that are like that these days. And I think we've seen some great examples where people have changed systems, they've changed what they do. It makes life very, very difficult for businesses. But unless you explain exactly what you do, I think people will make an assumption. And if that assumption that they've made is incorrect, then it can give a really negative experience.
And let's talk about incentives a little bit then, because something free or a discount or points, I think when a lot of clients that I work with think of an incentive, they think of something free or a discount, right? But it doesn't necessarily have to be that. An incentive can be broad, and they are so closely tied with loyalty programs. So from your perspective, what is the role of an incentive in a loyalty program?
So as you say, and to be honest with you, I've only spoken about free things or, you know, offers, but actually the biggest part of loyalty that we do tend to forget about is the experience. So I wouldn't mind if I didn't get anything for free, if there was nothing included, if there was no discount, if I knew that I would go to a restaurant and be sat on the table that I love, I would be greeted by name, I would be told that if I was a vegetarian, here's a vegetarian menu. My daughter goes, okay, well, you know, it's your daughter's birthday next month or whatever it may be. That for me is the real value. And I think it goes down to that generalization and the assumption as well. People will always assume that there is something for free or there's an offer. If you do it well, you don't necessarily need that, because the experience is what people go for. And, you know, there's an age-old saying within hospitality that you can have a bad experience and you won't go back. You can have a bad meal and you probably will. But it's all about the experience these days, because people are working extremely hard to save money. So they're going to go where they feel most valued. And that doesn't necessarily have to be financial. That can be an experience.
It's a really great point. Now, this is, of course, email after hours. So let's talk about the relationship between loyalty programs and email. which after all is how you and I got to meet all those years ago, Adam.
Absolutely.
How can senders make the absolute best use of the higher engagement levels that loyalty email users typically see?
We've seen huge success recently with one of our clients. The people that are in an app or in a loyalty scheme are already engaged to your brand. So it's about making that experience better. Pre-visit, post-visit are the biggest success stories that I've seen in the last few months. And, you know, a pre-visit automation that says, we know you're here tomorrow. Would you like to download our app? Would you like to pre-book a cake or whatever it may be and give them an experience? We're seeing open rates, and we can't really talk about open rates, but we're seeing huge engagement in these emails. We're talking upwards of 15% interaction, which is incredible. Yeah, we're seeing huge amounts of noise about them. We're seeing people talk about them because they are so hyper-personalized. You know, you're coming in for your visit at X location tomorrow at this time. We'd really love to offer you something. Post-visit, how was your experience? We don't want to sell you anything at this stage, but we really just want to know about your experience. Would you mind filling in this short survey so next time we can build a better picture and we can offer you more? That then goes back into the same feedback loop, essentially, and goes back into the system so that information can be used at a later date to give a better experience. That's really how I think email works. It's slightly different within apps and loyalty platforms because people really expect kind of push notifications and they expect to engage with the app. But the follow-up of email can be very powerful if it's hyper-personalized and hyper-targeted. And because of the information that we have within the apps, and the information that we take within the profiles is very easy to do.
And right now, while we're recording this, we're in spooky season. So it's October, just about Halloween now. However, we are about to enter what I think is probably spooky season for email marketers, which is the holidays and Q4 and that very, very long season where marketers are just trying to sell, sell, sell. And we know that during the holiday season, customer loyalty can be more complicated. Your customers are being barraged by emails from competitor brands. So do you have any advice for senders as they prepare for the holiday rush in terms of loyalty?
As you know, the holiday season just means that people are bombarded with emails, as you just said. I think the key is allowing them to recognize the brand by building up that journey. So they may interact with you on an app level, on a website level, whatever it may be, but just time the follow-up so it's still at the front of the mind. So in terms of, they talk about our loyalty platforms that we have, they've just been into the app, they've just logged on, they've interacted with it. Use that as the time to then target them with the email and be clever about the time of sending the message. We do that now with another client. We will, depending on how they interact with the brand, we will follow up after a certain data point. So if they've opened the app, we'll then follow up with a promotion or whatever it may be. If we can, if they've got a reservation, we'll make sure we try and include details of the reservation. We'll make it super personalized. And I've always had this desire for one-to-one emails. It becomes very difficult when you're dealing with, you know, millions of people. Using data that we have within loyalty platforms is data that historically people wouldn't normally hand over. They're very comfortable to do that because they're engaging with you daily. So the more information we can use in the subject line, in the body, in the preview text, whatever it may be, so they can tie those two messages together and remember your brand and remember that they've just interacted with you, can just ensure that even if they're scanning through their emails, I was on the app. Oh, actually, yeah, I've got a booking tomorrow. People just view preview text. If I've got a load of emails, I'll just skip through my preview text. It's about being visible. It's about making sure that if they only open three emails in a day, you're one of them.
Absolutely right. Now, a moment ago, you talked about the importance of personalization. And in fact, several times you've gone beyond that. You've talked about the importance of hyper-personalization, super-personalization. So when you are speaking with the brands that work with you, what kind of advice are you giving them when it comes to collecting customer information that you're going to use to personalize their loyalty experience?
I think we're very clear with our clients that as much data as you can collect, we'll consume it, we'll keep it, we'll use it. But if it's going to be data that is at risk of potentially not being particularly clean, let us know. I think there's Guy, you and I have spoken about this before, but I've worked with a restaurant brand many years ago who decided to personalize bookings from their reservation platform. Now, unfortunately, they just made a change and everybody that came in through the door, they would make a booking. So they knew that they'd been in and registered. But in one location, they decided not to take people's names. They just gave a description.
Oh, God.
You can see where this is going. So, dear Mr. I'll leave that one out and leave that to your imagination. But I think the key is take as much data as you can. But if there is a risk that it's not going to be particularly clean or there's something in there that you wouldn't want to use, make sure that the program and the people running the program are fully aware of the quality of the data. Because certain things, you know, if you have a first name and a surname and the data has been entered as it would normally for anybody's name, but the restaurant have decided to make a slight change to how they do it just to make their operational side of things easier, it's important that the people running CRM know, because this was a hefty one a few years ago and it didn't go particularly well.
I just can't get that out of my head, you know, sort of dear Mr. Bald Fat Guy who spilled his soup down his shirt.
It was on that level, guy.
Do you have a personal favorite personalization tactic when it comes to winning consumer loyalty?
I think I'm going to go back to the Hilton example again. So it was a case study that I saw many years ago between Hilton, it was a CRM, and I think it was Movable Inc. And they did an example of this one-to-one process that they had. And I've seen it myself with the Hilton Honors email program. But this beautiful kind of snake-like image that started at the top with how many times I'd been, how many countries I'd visited, how many hotels I'd stayed in, I think how many meals I'd ordered in the hotel, with this incredible journey that was just start to finish 2021 to 2022. It's just probably still the best loyalty example I've ever seen. And it's really where I strive to get our clients to. If I can send every email differently, which is difficult in most cases, but if I can really do one-to-one email, that's it. That's really the sweet spot.
I would screenshot that email and like save it as an, I don't know, because food is...
I think I've got it saved somewhere, because, and I've known Guy an awful long time, but I think I've probably had this conversation 10 times with Guy about this one example, and I've still not seen anything that's better.
And I know that, you know, loyalty programs, like any maybe triggered or transactional type messaging, it is not set it and forget it. You can't just create a loyalty program and walk away and hope that it works. So whether a brand is creating a new loyalty program or they're trying to revamp an old one, what's your best piece of advice for them?
Keep people warm. You know, businesses all fall guilty of trying to make changes, but they forget the guests and they forget the people that have made the platform. So just ensure that you communicate at every step, whether it's a new platform and it's on the way and you're warming people up to it, or you're going to make a change. Just make sure people are aware of it, because the minute you stop talking to these people, it becomes incredibly hard to get brand visibility again. It becomes incredibly hard to get that 1 second of inbox time, you know, when you're scanning through your emails or your promotion tab or whatever it may be. So it's really communication and keeping people warm.
This has been such a great conversation. And like all the best conversations, it's just gone whizzing past. But we need to start wrapping up. And like we started, we're going to finish off with a quick fire question or two. And my only fear is that the one I've got lined up for you, I worry that you've already given us your best answer. But let's see. Do you have any other loyalty program horror stories that you just need to get off your chest?
Fortunately, no. I think that one example was probably the best. Let me think. Are there any?
That was a good one, though.
No, I don't think it's just the personalization of comms. I don't really think anybody's ever done it horribly wrong, which is nice. Certainly nobody we've ever worked with, disclaimer. But no, I think that one example was my horror story.
I'm going to ask you another quick fire question, and this one is absolutely off the cuff, so watch out.
Okay.
Earlier on, you were talking about your favorite table four, and I've heard it told many times that restaurants actually have a favorite table of their own. It's the one where they put the beautiful people to sort of persuade the passing trade to come on in. Is it true?
It is true. And there are algorithms within systems that will allow people to specify these tables. So even if you are the most junior of waiters, there are specific orders of tables that you should sell. Generally, you know, the window first or the most visible table, or for the beautiful people. Guy, you'd obviously be that one.
There
is an order.
Can I say that once I got kicked out of a beautiful person table during my meal? I was traveling alone in Italy for a month about 10 years ago. And I went to I followed my nose essentially and found this beautiful pizza restaurant. And during the meal, the two tallest, most beautiful people you've ever seen came in and they asked me to move to a different table. Isn't that, I know this is
not
email-oriented people, but
That's the loyalty horror story that I missed out.
There you go. Exactly. And like Guy's question, you have, I think, already answered this. And I don't know, does Hilton like owe us money after this podcast? But apart from Hilton, what is one brand that you will stay loyal to almost no matter what?
British Airways.
Huh. Tell us about that.
I just think it's one of the best platforms, the best loyalty schemes. I only ever fly British Airways. I actually live in Manchester and I travel to India, I travel to Dubai, I go all over the world. And I actually fly from Manchester to Heathrow and Heathrow onwards because I am that loyal to the brand. And Avios, Air Miles, whatever you'd like to call them, are something that I've collected for many years. And I just think British Airways really leverage that. And they do know how to look after their customers. So that's probably with the Hilton and British Airways, I've got a match made in heaven of being able to travel anywhere and stay anywhere. That's probably one of my favorites.
Yeah, I'm pretty much with you on that one.
Even when we complain, we still fly.
Oh, absolutely. Adam Perslow, this has been such a great conversation. Thanks so much for joining us. And I feel like we're going to have you back at some time because there was so much we didn't explore today.
Anytime.
Our next guest in 2 weeks' time, we've got Serene Ratton joining us. She is a CRM expert of some note. In fact, she's probably forgotten more about CRM than most of us have ever learned in a lifetime. And it's almost going to be a natural follow-up to today's conversation because we're going to be digging into the principle of show me that you know me. It's going to be a great conversation. Don't miss it. We'll see you all again in a fortnight. Bye for now. Be sure to tune in next time and hit subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. And don't forget to visit senderscore.com for loads more great resources to help you become a stronger sender.
To all you sleepless senders out there, thank you for joining us after hours and see you next time.